So last week here in Perth, we had some very heavy rain down in Serpentine, and the wind was strong and it was freezing cold, and I was feeling sick with a cold. So there you were, the weather was miserable. It was windy and wet, and you were down with a cold. And I realized just how people can get so depressed. And today I'm going to tell you how to overcome the depressive moments of your life, because there I was in my room, looking through the window, just seeing wet and cold outside and cold and wet inside. And I had a letter to write to someone. Someone wanted me to write a foreword for their book. So I thought how I could write, and I remembered a story, because these were, she sent me an excerpt from her book, and there were some beautiful stories of her life as a social worker in Singapore, and just how, just with a little bit of extra kindness, just going that little bit further to help someone, she could create some very, very wonderful memories for herself and others. And so when I wrote the stories, when I wrote my foreword, I recalled a story which one of my fellow monks told me when they first went to London. Now, this monastery here, that we came out here about 28 years ago to build up our Buddhist community here. And the monks over in England went a couple of years earlier. So he was saying that when they first went, you know, over to London, number one, they went in the wrong time of the year. It was, you know, October, November. And number two, they were stuck in a little house in one of the northern suburbs of London. Now, like, we're forest monks. You know, we like sort of the forests and, you know, having some space, place to walk around. But imagine just a person who's used to these jungles of Thailand, the mountains where it's nice and warm and hot, and going into a little house, you know, in a city in the winter time. And they, even though they were monks, started getting depressed. And it's not hard to understand why. Because I remember those times in London as a kid. You know, the sun would come up about 10 o'clock in the morning and would set about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so everything was very dull. And because it was really cold, you know, everybody just wore these overcoats and scarves and hats. You couldn't see the faces, just a couple of eyes peering out. That's all you could maybe see. And now, being English, they were just so conservative. They would never wear any bright colours at all. It was always grey overcoats, grey shoes, grey hats. And when I started thinking about it, just the sky was always overcast. Even the sky was grey. The stone buildings were grey, the streets were all grey, the rain was grey, everything was grey. And I mentioned that even the tea they used to drink over there, Earl Grey tea, everything was all grey. No wonder people got depressed and suicidal over there, because there's no colour there, no life, no vibrancy. And everyone's got a stiff upper lip, so they can't even laugh at jokes anymore. It's really depressing when you tell a joke to an English person and they just sit there, stiff upper lip. Come on, it's funny. Laugh, for goodness sake. But anyhow, the monks were getting a bit tired and depressed because they were trying to find a place to stay out in the countryside, which is more suitable to forest monks, which is nice and peaceful. But then one morning, this monk got up and looked outside the window. And there's that special depressing rain in London called drizzle. You know, even the name drizzle is enough to make you contemplate suicide. So it was drizzling, it was dark, it was cold, it was gloomy. And he was wondering what he was doing there. But then he noticed that it was in this doorway of a house on the opposite side of the road, which was recessed, the door was recessed, and there was this man huddled in the doorway trying to protect himself from the cold and the rain, a homeless man. You know, in all these great cities, it's surprising, even though we're rich cities, even in Perth there are many people who haven't got a place to stay overnight, and probably even tonight, you know, sleeping in the parks, you know, in quiet places where they can try and find some warmth for the night. And this was one such person, you know, huddled against the cold, probably being there all night. And then he saw this other man walking towards this homeless man, this man who was well-dressed, you know, on his way to work. You know, what they used to see in England, this was about 30 years ago, you know, in a very nice suit and overcoat, the bowler hat, you know, the nice umbrella, just in a nice shoes, the old English gentleman or office worker in the old days. These days, ever since Richard Branson, they don't use things like that. They come in jeans and T-shirts or whatever else, you know, fits. But in those days, it was a very strict dress code. And so there he was walking towards this homeless man. And he paused. This well-dressed gentleman paused and leant over. And he said some unheard words to this homeless man and gently picked him up and took him for a hot breakfast. Even though this office man would be late for work and the smell of that homeless man would be on his clothes all day, that didn't matter. What was really important was someone who was cold and hungry could get something to eat that day. And this English gentleman gave him that. And when the monk saw that, he told me that all the greyness of London disappeared and it was brighter than the forests of Thailand, simply because he'd seen a spontaneous act of kindness. And that made all the difference to him. And it made all the difference to the depression of being in London in that time of year. And that reminded me that sometimes our life does get a bit dull and depressed. Because when I wrote that story, I don't know, the cold of that day and the rain and the wind and my own feeling of being tired because of a cold, it all disappeared. And I realized, like many of you can realize, that when we act out spontaneous acts of kindness, or whether we remember them, that brings such joy and happiness to our hearts. It totally dispels feelings of depression and anger and ill will and everything else which makes our life miserable. Which is why spontaneous acts of kindness have such a high spiritual value. We should talk about them, remember them, cultivate them ourselves, because that's what brings happiness and joy into our world. Yeah, we can philosophize and, you know, talk about Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path and all that sort of stuff, but it's a practical part of Buddhism. You know, that part of spirituality which we share with all others, these wonderful acts of kindness which give meaning, joy, happiness, which power our minds. And I've mentioned this especially to the monks and the nuns of our communities. If you really want to be serious about meditation and gaining deep meditation and wisdom, you have to cultivate kindness first, because that's almost the power source, the energy, you know, behind stillness. So it's wonderful to remember those spontaneous acts of kindness. And when you do start to remember them, they give amazing benefits. It's not just overcoming the depressions of life and the negativity and the disappointments. It just shows you what is possible, you know, in our modern world. There was one man who used to come here some years ago, and he told me this wonderful story of just simple acts of kindness, which he thought were nothing, which meant so much to somebody else. It was a simple story. He'd gone through a divorce, and many people, when they go through a divorce, come here. As soon as they're, you know, back together again, or they're settled with another partner, you never see them again. But that's fine. But anyway, this guy was coming here, you know, during the divorce time. And he told me that what happened to him, now, because of the divorce, he had to move out of the house, and because he moved out of the house into a small apartment, he had to get rid of his dog, which was a pedigree dog, which he couldn't just take to the dog's home. He advertised it and found a nice owner who had another dog of the same breed, which needed a friend, and it was this old lady. And because that, you know, he wanted to make sure that his dog was well looked after, he visited her for a few times. And this was an old lady who, you know, was living by herself. The dogs were her main companions in life. And she said that it was very difficult for her, being an elderly lady without a driver's license, getting around. The public transport in Perth is not that good. And so he said, well, I've got my own little business. I can take time off. If you never need a lift, let me know. And so every now and again, maybe once a month or something, she'd give him a call, you know, can you take me to a doctor's appointment? Can you take me to the dentist? And he was actually quite happy to do that. You know, he was a kind person. Now, those are acts of kindness, which, you know, if you do that, you take for granted, but it has immense effects on your life and other people's lives. And what happened one day, he said that she gave him a call. Can he take her into Perth, into the city? She had an appointment with her lawyer. So again, he took the time off work, only an hour and a half or something. He would catch up later on with his business. And when he dropped her off, she said, can you come in? I need you to witness something for me. Yeah, sure. He said, I can do that for you instead of just sitting outside. And so he went up to the lawyer's office, and there she signed him into her will. And she was an incredibly wealthy lady. She died a short time later, and this guy, he inherited a fortune. That's probably another reason why we don't see him anymore. But with all our fundraisers for this and fundraisers for that. But there was a nice little story you told me before he disappeared that he just did this out of kindness and he just made a fortune out of this. And I thought, that's actually how karma works. You know, people who are just really, really, really good and really kind and just go out of their way for others, even though, you know, it's your business, you should really be at his office, you know, taking calls or something. No, he decided it was really important to help somebody else, and he did, and this is what happened as a result. And even if you don't get any material reward, just, you know, doing acts of kindness is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. My most recent act of kindness, I don't mind, you know, telling, because these are stories which are close to my heart because, you know, this is my memories. You know, when I go overseas, tomorrow I'm going overseas again. I'm going to Thailand to teach a retreat. I should really confess to you all that this is a big retreat for about over 200 people held in a five-star hotel on the beach north of Phuket. So I'm not embarrassed at all because I understand the law of karma. I deserve it. I will. I'm going to work there. So next Friday night, when I'm not here, when some other monk is here, please remember what I'm doing. I'll be teaching. I'll be meditating, but in a much warmer climate. But anyhow, when I go overseas, it's not just teaching meditation. You do a lot of social work. When I arrived in Singapore a month ago, you know, they picked me up at the airport and I've got to give a talk that night, but they say, on the way, can you come and see this person? Can you come and see that person? And so this one person who wanted to see me, he was in the Institute of Contagious Diseases. But, you know, the head of that unit is a disciple. He's one of the Buddhists over in Singapore. So he said, I can get you inside because there's a guy inside who's got HIV, who's dying. He really wants to see you. He's read your book. Can you please come in? And so I said, yeah, sure, I can come in and see him. You know, even though you're really tired, you've got to give a talk soon afterwards. So I went to go and see this guy. And there was a guy just, you know, in the bed, just dying of some HIV-related virus or whatever in his Institute of Communicable Diseases. And there he was just so happy that a monk would come and see him and just talk to him. But then I thought, oh, come on. So I just put my arm around him and gave him a really big hug. And I don't usually do that to men. Have you ever seen me doing that here? No, you've got to have HIV and be communicable, and then I'll do it. And that melted this guy, because it's what he never expected. And that's the unexpected acts of kindness. That's what I never caught anything. I did catch a cold, but that was much later on, but nothing serious. But that's a beautiful thing to be able to do, and I was so proud of that. And that just made his life, but actually he died a few days later. So he made his death, is the right way to saying it. And the people around me were just so surprised I did that. And they were just saying that was such a wonderful moment of their lives to see someone just take a chance, take a risk and do something they shouldn't do, but just out of kindness. Instead of those are things which bring happiness and take away the sort of the thing, oh, what's going to happen if I touch somebody? Oh, am I going to catch something? Oh, blah, blah, blah. No, come on, look, be a bit kind, because kindness is worth the risk. And you find if you have those acts of kindness that come from your heart, you never suffer at all. I feel so proud I could do that. And when the social workers who were with me at the time told me that he died, they said it was just a wonderful moment. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. That's what religion is supposed to be about. Not about selfishness or caring about yourselves, but doing something which just takes kindness to the next level and inspires us of a much better meaning of life. So kindness not only inspires, but you get actually more done with kindness. It just moves the world along in a much better way. I don't know if you're a manager or a boss at some business, but, you know, sometimes people always complain about their managers and bosses to me. They say, these bosses, they just always push you around and they never really appreciate you. And my goodness, that's never the way to run a company. You know, we should have more Buddhist companies over here. You know, the BBC, the Buddhist Broadcasting Corporation, it should be. You know, or BGC, the Buddhist group of companies, I don't know. I'll be in trouble if I keep on listening. Someone will sue me. But it's good to have some more sort of spirituality, even in the commercial world, because you do find kindness actually works. And it's amazing just what you can do if you are kind to somebody. Then they want to work with you. Somebody told me another inspiring story, these spontaneous acts of kindness. They were saying they were in their kids' school fete. You know, the kids were having their fundraiser for their school. I don't know why schools need fundraisers. The government should pay for the schools, for goodness sake. That's what taxes are there for schools. Fundraisers should be for poor monasteries like ours. But anyway, because we don't get government support. But nevertheless, the having a school fete, and apparently that one of the fundraisers at their school fete were camel rides. Now, I don't know if you've ever gone on a camel ride. I'm too scared because, number one, they smell, and it's a long way up there. But anyway, we went up on top of this camel, and the camel had been, you know, going around the oval all day, and it was one of these hot summer West Australian days. And, you know, even though camels are used to deserts, you know, they're not really quite used to sort of ovals in the hot Perth summertime. So even the camel was getting a bit fed up, going round and round and round, carrying all these usually overweight parents. That's another reason why I wouldn't go on top of a camel, out of compassion, because my weight might just be that one straw in that simile. But anyhow, the guy was saying he was watching, you know, this camel going round and round and round, raising money for the school. And it was the end of the fete, so they were just all packing up to go home. And this one man came up and said, "Oh, please, 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 I know I'm a bit late. Can I go on a camel ride? I always wanted to go on a camel ride. You know, it's been my dream to go on a camel ride, please." And the guy said, "Well, it is finished. We can't do that anymore." He said, "Oh, come on, please." I said, "Oh, okay." So then, you know, the camel has to get down for you to get on it. You know, you can't, it's too high for you to jump on it. Not even John Wayne could do that in those old movies where they jumped on top of horses. Whenever they used to do that in the movies, have you seen those movies when they jumped on top of the horses? As a man, that made me cringe, and you know why. But anyway, so he told the camel to get down so it could climb on top of it, and the camel would not go down. It had enough. And so the owner just went up to that camel and he started stroking it. "No, dear camel, look, I know you've worked really hard today. I know it's been a really, really hot day, but we've raised lots of money for this school so the kids, they can go on their outings and we can do lots and lots of good things. You've been such a wonderful, good camel. And this man has come from such a long way. Would you mind, just for one more, to get down so this man can actually ride you and he can get some more money for the little children? And the camel went straight down. Even camels respond to kindness. And it was an amazing thing this man saw, that just that way that this owner treated the camel with kindness and talking to it, the camel responded, went down and allowed this man to go around. So look, if you want to get something out of your workers, or let's make it even closer to home, something out of your husband, just get your hand and stroke him, dear husband. I know that you're very tired, and I know that money's very, very tight, but I know you've been such a wonderful husband and spent so much money on me, but you know that that is a very important movie which I want to go to tonight. You know, I know you're very tired and want to watch the football, but... you know, it actually works, a bit of kindness. Maybe I'm going a bit over the top there, but... it's amazing just how little acts of kindness sometimes are so rare in our world that that is why they work. Because people feel them and they value them so much they want to respond in an appropriate way. And it is much, much more uplifting than ordering someone to do something or shouting at them or threatening them. And you usually get much more out of a person, like out of an animal, with that degree of kindness. And you also get much more out of yourself with those little acts of kindness towards yourself. And those spontaneous acts of kindness towards yourself, like giving yourself a cup of tea with extra sugar in it. Yeah, it's bad for your health and diabetes and everything else, but... it's great for your spiritual well-being. You're being kind to yourself. Or buying yourself a Big Mac, whatever you like to indulge in, every now and again. It's a wonderful little act of kindness towards yourself. I know it's one of the reasons why people do get depressed. And once they get depressed, while they take that out on others with being grumpy and being angry, is because they don't give themselves enough little acts of kindness for themselves. So when we talk about spontaneous acts of kindness, it's not just to other people, it's even to oneself as well. To give yourself a break. To be kind enough to accept an invitation to teach a retreat at a 5-star hotel. There, Ajahn Brahm, you deserve it. It's all right. There's no need to feel guilty. You're back. And that creates a lot more happiness and a much better state of mind when you deal with other people. So when you generate and encourage spontaneous acts of kindness, just it inspires people. And one of the other stories which I wanted to share, I don't know the last time I told this, I think I told this one over in Asia recently, but I forgot to tell it over here. It's an old story someone told me a long time ago, which when I heard it almost made me cry. I think it did make me cry. As even as a monk, as a male, sometimes if I hear something inspiring, I just let those emotions come up. And sometimes the emotions are so strong, they just, you know, make your eyes water. And instead of restraining that or repressing it, which most males do, I've learned as a monk, no, these are beautiful emotions, emotions of joy at acts of kindness, joy and inspiring events in people's lives. And, you know, you just allow your eyes to get watery. It's amazing this, that a lot of times in meditation retreats, which I give, like people do want to cry. And they say, why is this happening? I'm meditating. Why am I crying for? Look, there's some stuff which you've repressed. You've stopped. These are not tears of sadness. These are tears of joy and inspiration. Sometimes we repress and stop so much that when we meditate, we let things be. We open the door of our heart to the moment. We're just at peace with things. We don't try and squash things. We just let them come out. It's amazing that sometimes these beautiful tears of joy come out. And sometimes people say they don't know why. But they're there and they're lovely and enjoy it. I remember one retreat, which is in my acts of kindness, encouraging you just to be. One act of kindness, which I did at one retreat down at Jhana Grove, this man was coming to the retreat for the first time. And he came to see me at interview because he just started weeping. And he said it's the first time he'd cried in about 23 years. So thank you so much. And that really made me cry as well. Because there was a fellow who hadn't learned how just to trust his emotions. And for some reason or another, he'd sort of kept himself repressed in check, being a male, being strong, whatever it was. Kept himself in such a tight cage for so long. And now he could let it out and just be and just cry. And it was just such an amazing, wonderful experience. You could see the smile on his face and the relief just being able to do that. It's wonderful to do that. So sometimes the inspiration is wonderful to just allow the tears to flow when that happens. But this one story, there's a story of this guy. He told it in a little book. He was a doctor in the United States. And he said that he came from a really poor family. And, being from a poor family, that during any vacation time or during the weekends and sometimes even during term time, he had to get some sort of job, to pay his way. And, even though, when I went to Cambridge, I had scholarships, even I had to get all sorts of jobs, to try and help out to pay the bills because my father had died, no means of support. You're just looking after yourself. So I can really appreciate what this guy did. And I once got a job selling encyclopedias from door to door, and he was selling something from door to door. When you were a student, you'd accept almost anything as long as it was legal. And so anyway, he had this job of selling something from door to door. If ever you've been a door-to-door salesman, it's just the lowest of the low in salesmen. You knock at people's door and the dog barks at you, and somebody throws something at you, you've got to run fast. All those sorts of things happen. But then he was doing this, and so he knocked at somebody's door, and this lady answered the door and said, "No, thank you." That's what you usually say, but at least she was polite. But then she said, "Stop," before he turned around. He said, "When was the last time you had something to eat today?" And he said, just this morning at breakfast, and it was the middle of the afternoon. So that was a woman who said, just wait a moment. And she just brought him a glass of milk and a couple of cookies, a couple of biscuits. Here, have these. It's like a simple act of kindness. Isn't that wonderful when people do this for you? You're not going to buy anything, but there's a poor little man, trying to sort of pay his way through college. And he's very tired because he's working all day. And you just stop to give him something simple. It doesn't cost you anything, a glass of milk and a couple of biscuits. But he remembered that. He remembered that little act of kindness. Because what happened later on in his life, when he became, he graduated, became sort of a top surgeon, he had this patient, which was referred to him, with this really, really bad cancer. And it was referred to him because he was maybe one of the only surgeons in the United States who could possibly sort of remove these tumours. And he looked at the case and realised, this was going to be really, really a difficult case. So he called in some favours from his fellow doctors to get them to fly in. This was going to be really a major operation. And so he really went the extra mile for this patient. And it was a success. He managed to, get all the tumours out, and they looked like the patient was going to be in full remission. But, this was in the United States. And you notice how expensive operations and medical bills are in the US. When they say they cost an arm and a leg, they literally mean it sometimes. And anyway, when she opened the bill, she was glad that she was going to be living, but when she opened the bill, she was really afraid. But when she opened it, she saw scrawled on the bill were the words "paid" with two cookies and a glass of milk. It was that lady. That doctor had remembered her. This woman who he'd stopped by as a student and just asked to sell something, and she gave him a glass of milk and two biscuits. He could never forget that woman and her address. As you never do forget simple acts of kindness. She forgot it. But when he had this patient, the name rang a bell. The address was the same. She hadn't moved. And he realized who this lady was, which is why he called in all his favors from his friends, other doctors and radiologists and whatever, did this operation, paid for it himself. And in his bill, he said, it's already been paid by those two biscuits and a glass of milk you gave me 30 years ago. It's a beautiful story. And that's the sort of stories which I call these spontaneous acts of kindness, which bring meaning to the world, which means that you never feel depressed and upset when you hear such things. You realize this world is a beautiful place with wonderful people in it. And these acts of kindness are what makes the world warm in the cold days of winter, which makes the light bright in the overcast days, which when you keep remembering them, they just bring up so much joy and inspiration that any depression, suicidal thoughts, anger, ill will just totally vanish. You're inspired by real stories of kindness. So, every one of you here, we have these opportunities every now and again, not that often, they just come every now and again when you're asked to do something or someone is in front of you or an opportunity opens up and you think, no, it's too hard, I can't do this, it's too difficult. Please never think that way. When there is that opportunity, when there is something, just go for it and you will never, ever in your whole life regret it. In fact, you will think, thank you for that opportunity. One other personal story, which I love to... It was last year. Last year, during our retreat period, I got a call from one of the disciples, followers in Singapore. Her husband died. And, you know, they've been married for a long time. And your husband dies, and you know, you have this beautiful relationship together. That just really tears you apart. And because it was Singapore, she said, the funeral's going to be tomorrow afternoon. Can I come? It's a rains retreat, and it's just the day before. Now, how can you arrange flights and everything just in less than 24 hours? It's totally impossible. You can't do things like that. And anyway, I had all these other things I had to do the next day, all these teaching of the monks and other sort of arrangements to do. I can't do things like that. So I did it. The monks thought I was crazy. But, you know, this is the beautiful things to do. So I rang up my favourite travel agent. You know, I won't say who they are because that'd be advertising. And I said, look, this is an emergency. Can you get me a flight? And so... You know, because I've been kind to them, they go to the extra mile for me. They rang up sort of Singapore Airlines, managed to get me a flight on the the 2 a.m. flight. So I arrived there in the morning and did the funeral for them. And I felt so wonderful about that. And they were so surprised. They said, well, no, it's just an off chance. We never thought you'd come because we know how busy you are. And we know just, you know, it's just the day before. You can't just suddenly get a flight. But yeah, I did. And I felt so proud of that. So one of the things I did last year, which I thought was one of the best things which I've ever done last year, simply because I didn't need to, but I wanted to, just to make one woman's grief just that little bit more bright by someone she just asked to come, could come, and just brighten up, you know, that terrible loss of someone she'd been living with for such a long time. So, yeah, I was really exhausted by the time I got back. So I had to catch up on sleep a lot of time instead of meditating. But sometimes, what am I meditating for? Why am I a monk? It's to do things like that. And actually to teach by example. And so instead of all of these words and books which you can read, isn't it wonderful when actually people actually do something? And they do these great acts of kindness. Because what that does... It just shows that this life is worth living, and that is probably its purpose more than anything else, to take those opportunities to do something out of the ordinary, which sometimes hurts, which is sometimes, Now, no reasonable person would expect you to do that, but you do that anyway, just for the sake of kindness and joy and really giving that little bit extra. So in those little bit extra things, you see so many examples of that in life. Now, sometimes the problem is that people don't report those examples of just staying in later on and just holding somebody's hand just when they're dying and just being with them hour after hour after hour, even though you don't need to, even though you're tired, even though you've got a headache, that you want to go to sleep. No, this person is dying. I'm going to care for them. That's one of the stories, and I haven't said this for a while, it deserves repeating here. There was one of the young men here when, you know, I've known him since he was small, you know, going through school. He was an Asian guy, so he used to come to the temple very often, dragged by his parents. But, you know, he appreciated, you know, the guidance he got here, you know, did well, went to university, went through medical school, became a doctor. But the first year as a doctor, he had the first patient who died on him. And he was devastated. Because I think it was a young girl or something, a young wife, and that was his patient. He had to tell the husband and the, with the two young kids, you haven't got a wife anymore. Your kids have got no mother, she's died. Imagine what that's like to do that, have to do that as a doctor. And even though he was not at fault, it's just these things happen. He felt so guilty. He felt that he'd let down a family, because he was talking to the family, and he could see just the horror in the husband's eyes that he'd lost his young wife, and he didn't know what to do with the kids. You can imagine the situation. So he came to me just devastated. He said, "What should I do? Should I find another job, profession? I feel such a failure." And that's when I told him, look, if you think your job as a doctor is to cure people, you'll be a failure many, many times in your life. Because many of your patients will die. Many of the remedies won't work. That's part of being a doctor. So if you think that your role is to cure, you will have a lot of suffering and you will not be a good doctor. I said, your role as a doctor in that hospital or in your clinic, wherever you work, is not to cure, but to care. And if you care, you never need to fail. If you care, you will always be successful. Yeah, the patient might die, but they die knowing they've been cared for. And the family know that they've got the best of care. And then that will take away much of the sting of losing a loved one. They've been cared for in their last days or weeks of life. And you as a doctor or as a nurse or as a psychologist or as a therapist, whatever role you have in the sickness of human beings, you have been a success. You cared. And that's all you can do. I say, if you make that your main role as a doctor, as a nurse, as a therapist, to be a carer rather than a curer, then you know the reason why you joined that profession. And you will always have the opportunity for success. And imagine what it's like, someone who is dying, or when you are about to die. Do you want to be always cured, or do you want to be cared for? And sometimes you can't have both. Sometimes when people are on their last days of life, sometimes curing is so important, is the most important thing, that you forget about caring and have all these very unpleasant interventions which have got very limited chance of success, and they sacrifice the comfort of the last few days for try to cure at all costs. And to me, that is the problem with our medical system. When we have caring is more important than curing, then when it does come to that stage where there's no reasonable possibility of cure, we won't intervene at all costs, because the major purpose is to care. And also, because we're caring for people rather than trying to cure them, there's more possibility of curing them as well. I'm sure that you will get much better success rate in the therapies when the main purpose is to care rather than to cure. This whole idea of curing a person, changing them, curing your husband, curing your wife of her bad habits, curing your kids who are too lazy and spend too much time on the computer instead of their studies. We have a society which always wants to cure people, to make them better. And we create a lot of problems that way. Instead of trying to cure your kids of their bad habits, try caring for them instead. That's most important. And if you care for them, the cure will come as a natural result, more often than not. But unfortunately, that we always want to change people instead of caring for them. And we also want to change ourselves. Many people come here because they want to get changed. Now, you won't get changed. I'm not here to cure you. I'm here to care for you. And this whole Buddhist society, if we're trying to cure you, I'd have committed suicide a long time ago. Some of you have been coming here for years and years and years and years and years, and you're still the same. You haven't advanced one bit in your meditation. After coming to hundreds of retreats, you feel such a failure. Well, that's not the job of trying to make you different or better or enlightened or whatever. The job is to care for you. And if you make caring more important than curing, you understand why these stupid acts of kindness, like, you know, going off at the last minute's notice, just, you know, because somebody just wants you to be at their husband's funeral, why coming to do chanting for somebody's dog who's got sick. I've done that too. The dog wasn't even a Buddhist. The owner was. It's stupid things to do, but why do you do that? I don't know, it's irrational, which is the most important thing of kindness. Kindness is irrational. Never try and justify it. If you do, you spend so much time justifying things, the opportunity for kindness just vanishes. You've got to grab it while it's there. Grab the moment for kindness, because it goes very quickly. And if you grab that moment and just do it, you'll never regret it. If you go thinking about it, should I do this, should I not do this? Oh, to hell with that. Go and do it, for goodness sake, just for the fun of it, for the hell of it, for the joy of it, whatever you want to call it. And when you do that, it just makes your life so beautiful. You'll never regret it. Any depression, upset, anger vanishes, because it just cannot take the warmth and the joy and the brightness of real acts of kindness just for the sake of it. Not trying to get anything out of it, but just it's worthwhile doing. For the hell of it, I'm going to give it a go. And if you do that, many of the psychological problems which beset humankind totally disappear. And not only for you, other people see you. Other people see you doing these amazing acts, and it brings joy to their hearts as well, and they want to imitate it. It brings happiness into this world. So, any opportunity you have, spontaneous acts of kindness, doing something which is irrational, even dangerous to your health or whatever, hugging somebody who's got infectious diseases, give it a go, who cares? You're going to die anyway, so you might as well die having cared for somebody, never trying to cure them. So that's already my time is up. That went very quickly. So thank you all for listening. Please go out there and do spontaneous acts of kindness. I meant to say that SAKs. Life sucks. SAKs. Okay, oh, we got some questions here from overseas. There we go. Okay, we won't go. The first one is from India. The next one is from Texas. The next one is, where was this country? Geraldton. Just up the road somewhere. So Mona from India. How to overcome depressive feelings when you live with people with depression and are not strong enough to resist depression's influence? You don't always live with people with depression. You tune in to our website every Friday night and you broadcast it loud in your house and get everyone to listen to. And then you'll find you're living with the 300 people who come every Friday night to our Buddhist center here in Australia. And it sort of uplifts you. So you may be in a house, you know, in some poor part of India with depressing people, but there are many opportunities to bring light and warmth and happiness into that house, as you're doing now, Mona, by just listening to this talk. Listen to it, play it loudly, so no one, everybody in your house can hear it, and then they too will get brainwashed by the monks and nuns of Perth to be able to look at life in a totally different way. Many people have come to this centre in depression and upset and suicidal and really miserable, and they go out happy. That's what we're here for. Not to cure you, Mona, but to care for you. And just to know you're cared for all the way over in India. It means your life gets light and happy and brightness comes. Erica from Texas. Dear Ajahn Brahm, you encourage people to open the door of our hearts to life. How does one practically open one's heart to depression? That's a really good question. One of the reasons why depression really sort of takes hold of a person is they get depressed about being depressed. It becomes like a cycle which feeds on itself. So just one way, and people think this is funny, but this is actually quite profound. Enjoy your depression. Milk it for everything it's worth. When you're depressed, people will care for you. So say, here I am, I'm really depressed today. Please, come on, care for me. Show me some sympathy. You don't have to get up early in the morning, so enjoy a sleep in bed. Well, it'd be very wonderful to, you know, have time in bed. I've got to get up really early in the morning to catch a flight. Maybe if I'm depressed, maybe can I not get the flight? So first of all, be with depression. Don't fight it. Don't try and cure it. Care for it. Caring for things is opening the door of your heart to them, allowing them to be. It's a natural part of the cycle. And if you open the door of your heart, and rather than think there's something wrong, or there's some stigma, or there's something bad about this, you will let it be. Allow it to happen. You will find the very cause for future depression is overcome. I call this like understanding the law of karma. Depression is here right now. You've got to accept this. But it's a future depression you're working on. And a future depression built on negativity. You're not going to be negative now. In this moment, you're going to open the door of your heart to this feeling of yuckiness, of low energy, of nothing, of emptiness, of anything joyful. Open the door of your heart to that. Let it be. Be a friend to it. Then you're making the karma to destroy future depression. You just cannot stand that. You'll find making peace, being kind, being gentle. That is what we call good karma in Buddhism. To be just really profound, being kind, being peaceful, being gentle is the essence of good karma, whatever that is. If you do that, the negative karma of depression disappears. And it's surprisingly quickly. That's the amazing thing. It's just amazing just how fast the depression disappears. Attitude problem. It's a difficult one. It takes a lot of courage to open the door of your heart to something so unpleasant. You can do it. If you do, and do it 100%, you'll find the depression just vanishes, just like the mist vanishes through the warmth of the sun. The warmth is opening the door of your heart. Give it a try, Erica. Really do it full on, and you'll find just how powerful that is. And one thing you remember that, if you ever get depressed again, you know exactly how to deal with it. Make peace with it. Be kind. be gentle. When you find depression comes less and less, you know the way out. Anyway, Jackie from Geraldton. I've heard the wonderful story of the two bricks in the wall, but sometimes it seems easier said than done. How do I stop thinking about it so I don't get depressed? I always say to myself and others, this too will pass, but feel anxious in the meantime. That two bad bricks in the wall story, the most famous story here, over in monastery, when I first learned how to lay bricks, I made two big mistakes. I was really careful, but still mistakes happen. Has it ever happened to you? You've been really careful, but still mistakes happen?
Of course they do. That's life, isn't it?
Doesn't matter how careful you are, just how mindful, how many precautions you put into place, mistakes happen. Mistakes are wonderful in life, as I mentioned later on. So, yeah, I made two big mistakes. But at that time, that was about 27 years ago, just 28 years ago, just come to Perth. I was very stupid and I got so upset at my mistakes. I was embarrassed because that was my mistakes and everybody could see it. We had visitors came and I would volunteer to take the visitors around, so I could guide them on a path they would not see my terrible wall. I did that. I would have nightmares. I'd wake up in the middle of the night in a sweat thinking of my mistakes. I'd just been dreaming about them. I was so upset with those. Every time I walked past that wall, I saw my mistakes. Gee, I made a big mistake. Until that one person came, I was with them, and they said, "That's a beautiful wall." You know what happens when someone says that? You know, you're having me on. Are you blind? You know, what's wrong with you? Can't you see those two bad bricks? And that's when they said, yes, but I can see the 998 good bricks as well. And that, you know, well, I can't resist it. That, I keep on saying this. That hit me like a brick. But 3 months, I think it was, every time I thought about that, I thought about my mistakes. And that's the only thing I ever saw in that wall, two bricks. And somebody else had to say there's more bricks in that wall. And that was a huge opening of insight and wisdom. Being depressed is when we just see the two bad bricks. And that's why I wanted to destroy that wall. I wanted to blow it up, start again. You know, like sometimes people get suicidal, they want to blow themselves up and start again. Why? Because they see two bad bricks and they just cannot see the 998 good ones. Why do people get divorced or they break up their relationship? They can see the two bad bricks in their partner and they can't see the 998 good ones in them. So all you need to do just to see the other things, not the things which you don't like, but the other things which are wonderful in your partner. And you find, well, actually, that's a nice wall. But the best part of that, feel anxious in the meantime, not to get depressed. The beautiful part of that story is when this builder said, all bricklayers make mistakes. But that's when he said, in the building industry, when we make mistakes like that, we tell our clients, the people who pay the bills, we tell our clients that's a feature. And we charge them an extra couple of thousand for it. I was saying that. And I thought that's a beautiful addition there, because your mistakes are your features. They make you human. You're not perfect. I'm not perfect. I tell stupid jokes sometimes. Oh, the stupid joke I meant to say today. I tried it out on a few people. It's the octopus joke. There's this guy. He was working in the aquarium for the first day, and the keeper said, clean out the octopus tank. So he went to the octopus tank. But he had to take the octopus out first of all. The octopus never wanted to go. It's got eight arms. Was always clinging on to something. You try and pull one arm off, you get that off, and you're working on another arm, the first arm goes on again. So he spent one whole hour trying to get the octopus to let go, and nothing worked. So he went to the head keeper, like, I can't get the octopus out. He said, look, use the shovel. Oh, okay, use the shovel. So he went with the shovel trying to lever the arms off. He got about three or four off at a time because it was much quicker with the lever. But every time he got three or four off, he was working on the other couple, and the first ones went back onto something again. because the octopus did not want to go. So wasting another half an hour, went back to the head keeper. I can't get octopus out. And the head keeper said, that's not the way to use the shovel to make the octopus to let go. This is the way you use the shovel. So he went to the octopus cage, got the shovel, and banged the octopus hard on the head. And the arms, eight arms went on top of his head. Oh, 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 that hurts. And then they could carry him out of the cage. But when you visualise that, it's very funny. But when you think that comes from a very kind Buddhist monk, that's a bit embarrassment. But that's my two bad bricks in the wall. I say some stupid jokes that they don't care. But they're very funny. So anyway, that's how to stop being depressed. It's always to, you know, look at the other bricks in the wall, and there's plenty there to look at. And regard your faults and your sort of idiosyncrasies, the things which really sort of get up you. Regard them as your beautiful features, which makes you human and makes this world has got this texture. So when people do have faults, you learn to love them. That's who they are. Would you like to have a perfect monk or nun here every Friday evening who never tells stupid jokes? Who never does anything wrong, never makes mistakes. No, making mistakes is part of life and it's beautiful. Okay, so thank you for listening. Any questions from our local audience from Perth? Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. I've got a comment. I work in a major hospital and I see sick people and death on a daily basis.
Very good.
And I noticed one thing, that most of the patients don't want us to treat them different. And they are very normal, very cheerful. And I find that very beautiful and reassuring. And some of the patients who've got only a few days to live on, and they still keep that sense of humor till the end. And I find that very positive, very reassuring, and very beautiful. And that is my opinion.
Very good. Excellent. So sometimes it's nice to hear stories like that, because one day we're going to be that person, you know, who's in the hospital dying. Don't be afraid. Be cared for. Care for yourself. Wonderful time of your life. The sun sets over here in Perth at the most beautiful times of the day. The end of days can be the most beautiful. When I used to listen to great symphonies, just the crescendo which comes up at the end of the symphony, all the different strands of the music all come together. And just the whole orchestra just bursts out into this amazing finale. And then it's finished. The end of a human life. Wow. Different way of looking at it. So well done that that's happening in the hospital you're teaching. Okay, so that's enough for tonight, folks. So we now pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do whatever we need to do.
Arahant Sammasambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. So akato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghang namami.